This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars and car repair problems and all that kind of fun stuff we're doing. So if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got Bruce on the line. I'm going to get to you real quick, Bruce, but I have to take care of some business first. I've known Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair, since the late 70s. I've known him as a good tech. I've known him as a good person. I've actually worked with him hand in hand as we did some construction together on his cabin, and he's a good guy. He has a full-service facility called Action Auto Repair, and it's at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. It's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop. He's been up there since 1983, and Tom and his staff are well-known because they have master technicians. They really have good customer service. They have a fast turnaround time, which is important, and they want to make you, as vehicle owners, understand what they're doing and why, so they're going to go out of their way to help you make informed decisions. So Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. Just real quick, let me talk about engine codes. And everybody knows that my car has a code. My car has a check engine light, and behind the check engine light is this code thing. The code tells you that the problem is in Cleveland, okay? You still have to find the city and the street and the house. So that's important. There is tests that have to be run. I'll give you just a quick example, an oxygen sensor. I think that on check engine lights with oxygen sensor, to replace the oxygen sensor at my shop is maybe 10% of the time. The other 90% of the time, it's not the oxygen sensor, although the code says oxygen sensor. But here's why. The parts places that have these three-whiskered kids with these little handheld devices, and they pull the code and they go, oh, you have an oxygen sensor code. So you're going to go inside, and they're going to look in a book, and they're going to, oh, yeah, you have four of them. You need to replace all four of them. So you're going to spend $200, $300, $400 for four oxygen sensors and go home and put them on, and you're going to clear the code, and it's going to come back. You see, there is 100 things that can cause your oxygen sensor to give a value that's not correct. If your fuel filter's plugged, your oxygen sensor will scream lean, I need more fuel. If your fuel pressure regulator is bad, then the engine's getting too much fuel and the oxygen says, oh, shut the faucet off. You see, the oxygen sensor is the messenger. And until you check what's going on, and until you look at the oxygen sensor and say to it, in computer language, I'm going to create a situation and you tell me on a 1 to 5 scale where I'm at. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I do this and it says 1. And I go, that's what I wanted to hear. Then I do this and it says, oh, 2.5, 3. Good. And then I do this and it goes 5. And I go, perfect. You have a brain. You're working right. I need to work why this thing is running rich. But you're replacing the oxygen sensor is just killing the messenger. Folks, we have to check fuel pressure. We have to check evaporative systems. We have to clear computer memories and start all over again. We have to do a lot of work in order to identify the code. Well, the code's easy. That three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, he has this little code reader that costs $20. He plugs it into your car and he pretends like that's all he needs. Folks, the scanner, there's a difference between a code reader and a scanner. The scanner is a serial stream data machine. It's a computer that we plug in, and the computer lets us watch what's going on. Now, if you look at your mass airflow sensor, and you see a number that's 40, and the car's just sitting there idling, is that kid going to know 40 is a good number or a bad number? And the answer is he doesn't know. So he's going to sell you a mass airflow sensor, and when you put it on, it's going to be 42. So the idea is that you have to know what the numbers mean. On the O2 sensor, they basically have 0.1 to 0.5. And so what's good and what's bad? What's up and what's down? What's left and what's right? If you don't know that, it's no different than when the doctor looks at an MRI. If you looked at your MRI, you wouldn't know your kidney from your liver. Of course, I wouldn't know. But he does. And that's why it's important. You can guess with your money, but here's what you can't do. At the shops I know of, and you can't do it at mine either, you're not going to come in and tell me that you spent $400 trying to fix this code and you haven't, and you're wondering if I will give you a deal because you spent all this money guessing. And the answer is no. The answer is no. I don't work for free, and I'm sorry that you guessed, and I'm sorry you let that three-whiskered kid bamboozle you into buying all kinds of stuff. But there are times that a fuel leak, internal fuel leak, an injector that's bad, will cause three or four codes that name three or four different items. So, and I tell people all the time, how much have you spent? They tell me. And I said, I would have diagnosed it for less than that. You can go fix it, but I would have diagnosed it for less than what you spent guessing. So most of us are in the 75 to 150 range to diagnose. If it goes over 150 at my store, we're going to call you. But I'd say 75-85% of the repair of the diagnosis we do, find the cause, find the root of the problem, is between 75 and 150. 10-4?
Yep, that's right. And it saves you a lot of money. I mean, we've seen people $2,000-$3,000 that they've spent and they still haven't fixed a problem. And we had the guy the other day that I think we fixed it for $100. I mean, and you feel bad for him, but it's like that they think you're expensive, so they don't want to come there. But
I remember that car. What it was it that was one of those that you hunted the problem down, and the problem was $92 to hunt it down, and it was you had to plug something back in.
Right.
And it was underneath the hood, and you wouldn't have seen it.
Right.
And this vacuum line fell off, or this vacuum line had a hole on it, so you pull off 6 inches of 9/32 vacuum line, you put on a brand new piece of vacuum line, and then you've got $95 to find it, you got a part for $3, and you got to replace it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how it sounds
right.
A lot of times. So yeah. You could do what you want with your money. I'm not telling you what to do, but here's, you can't tell me that I need to supplement your bad judgment. That's not a good idea. It depends, though. If you're one of my customers and has a three-digit customer number out of 38,000,
mm-hmm.
I might extend a courtesy to you. I might, because they've been with us for more than 10
yeah.
years. So, and their wives make mistakes when they say, "Let's go down to AutoZone and have the three-whisker
sure.
kid pick
yeah.
the code out for
mm-hmm.
us and stuff like that." So, I usually save the guys.
Okay.
And Andy, our daughter, saves the
girl. It's the wife's fault.
It is. Okay, Bruce. Oh, by the way, the phone number is 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or if you want to argue with me, that's fine. 602-508-0960. Bruce, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, thank you. I got some tire issues I wanted to talk to you about.
Okay.
I have a 2011 2500 HD diesel, and 2014 I put a set of Michelins on it, and about, I don't know, now we have like about 22,000 more miles. We're still about 37,000 on it. So the tires got 20,000 on them. So probably 2 years ago, I had a tread separation on the left rear, and the company I was dealing with had warranties on the tire. They replaced it. About a year ago, I had tread separation on the right rear. They took care of that. About 2 weeks ago, I had a tread separation on the right front, and I was trying to – I've been dealing with the shop for 27 years, over the years, and they've done all my tires and stuff. So I was like, you know, the left front's the only one out of the four that hasn't tread separated on. So I went ahead and put a new set of tires and additional, left front on too, another set of Michelins to match.
Okay, but let's get to the questions. Let's get to the symptoms of the questions.
Well, the question I have is, do you think there's any recourse through Michelin, just due to the fact that I've had three out of four separated, it's been 4 years and 20,000 miles.
All right, I think it's worth asking. I don't know if you're going to get any satisfaction. That's kind of like, there's just so many, you know, I had a bad spark plug. Would you replace them all? Or I fouled two of them with oil and it's a four cylinder. Why don't you do the other two? Well, and I want to tell you something. Give me the symptoms of what happened and how did you know you had a tread separation?
Well, the first one I had, the left rear, I had a vibration in the rear of the vehicle. Okay. And I could see that. You could see that the tread was kind of offset and kind of slanted to one side.
Okay, it's called an air bubble. I understand that. How about the other two? Are they the same?
Yes.
Okay. Were all of these on the same side of the tire? Were all of them in the center of the tread or the left, or the inner side of the tread or the outer side of the tread?
They were all on the... trying to think now. They're all on the inner side, I believe.
The reason I ask you that is because we can have tread separations on the outside. If they're all on the outside of the tread, between the tread and the sidewall, or in the sidewall where we have the separation, it's typically because of a hard hit. So it's, sometimes okay. I've been known to park by braille and scrub a tire pretty good. So I don't know the answer. I want to tell you this. I've been dealing in tires since 1968 when I was 2 years old. And I've never had a customer with three tread separations. Never. In my whole life, never. That would have stuck out to me. And I've just never had that. So it's a very unusual thing. I think it's worth asking and just do it in a nice way. Dear Michelin, I'm a happy customer of yours. I've been dealing with this shop for 27 years. I've had three tires that have separated and it's been verified by the shop. I have one left. I'm sincerely worried about my safety. I'm sincerely worried about the inconvenience this may cause me. So I was wondering, could you or would you please extend whatever considerations that you would normally offer? And perhaps I'm asking you if you would just simply replace the fourth tire at your expense. Now,
okay.
Here's the deal. There's only two things they're going to say, three things. They're going to say yes, no, or the middle ground is we'll prorate that one. So if the tire's 50% worn, just hypothetically, because I know you paid more than $100 for those Michelins, if the tire's a $100 tire and it's 50% worn, then you need to pay $50. You get a new tire because you've got to pay $50 for the wear. So it's going to be one of three. But if you do it in the way I just described, I think your chances are virtually 100%.
The other thing I just wanted to ask you real quick, when I was talking to the manager of the shop, he told me that due to the low amount of miles that I had on that tire, and he said the tires have been obviously sitting quite a bit over that. That's like 5,000 miles a year. And that the oil has leached out of the tires, and that's causing them to tread separate.
Okay. All right. Stop there.
Is that true?
I'm going to give you two letters of the alphabet. B-S. Okay? I don't know where that come from. That's brand new to me. I've been selling tires since 1968, and I do sell lots of tires. I have access to all the tire professionals I need in the world. One of them just passed away. John Dawes was the best tire, and he was a former Michelin guy. He'd be the one I asked. But I've had thousands of conversations with John Dawes, and he's never said anything about the oil in the tire gravitating to the bottom of the tire. And I've never seen a tire that had anything gravitate to any portion of the tire. That's an unusual response, and I wouldn't take that to the bank and bet on it. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you want to have a conversation about a car problem, then just give us a call. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour and 40 minutes, you're stuck with me, and we're talking about cars and car repair stuff. Auto Dynamics is one of Sun City's largest and most trusted sources for complete automotive services. They've been family-owned and operated since 1982, and actually Chuck and his son, I worked with Chuck in the 1968 through 1974 period of time. So Chuck was a gas station guy way back then. Nevertheless, Automotive Dynamics has great staff, and mechanics, and nobody's paid a commission or a percent of your repair bill, so therefore they're ensuring that no one sells any unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're in the Sun City area and you're looking for a great shop, may I recommend Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. John, you're up first. How can I help you today?
Yeah. Good morning, Mark. This is John, and thank you for taking my call this morning. I have a 2003 Toyota Sienna, and it's kind of my backup car. I got 243,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And on the platinum plugs, I got about 140,000. I just want to, out of curiosity, how long have you seen platinum plugs last on a Toyota Sienna?
Well, the answer is we've pulled them out at 200,000, but typically they're really worn, really ugly, and we're there looking in that area because we have a misfire code. So I don't know the answer about how long they go, but I agree that they can go 200,000 miles. I think there's a couple of things that we need to worry about. They're expensive. You already know that. The downside is that older spark plugs sometimes will shed the porcelain inside the spark plug. And when that happens, it beats up the piston and beats up the head and sometimes sticks a valve open. And you've just gone from a $25 or $30 spark plug repair or a spark plug to a $2,000 or $3,000 engine job. Or at least pull the head off and fix that part of it. So I think the risk increases a lot. And in reality, if you're already at 243, if I were you, I would replace them. I think the risk, it gets greater every day you drive it. And I would think, and here's what you're going to find out. If it runs a whole lot better, you're going to call me back and say, I have an answer to my own question. Because you're going to say, oh, it runs a lot better, starts a lot better, and my fuel economy's gone up 1 or 2 points. Or you're going to say,
well,
I couldn't tell the difference.
Yeah, Mark, I'm getting about 22 miles to the gallon right now in the city.
Well, you won't know if you'll get better until you put fresh plugs in it. But the electrical system on your Toyota is like everybody else's. It's like an arc welder. So it's going to jump a pretty good gap. But just keep in mind that we wear out the electrodes. And so the gap gets bigger and bigger and bigger. If you're going to pull out the spark plugs to regap them, you can do that too. But if I were you, you changed them, when? You, or these original at
105,000 miles, and I drive nothing but Toyotas. Another Toyota I had them pulled out at 100,000, and I asked the technician to give them to me after he pulled them. They looked almost brand new.
I know, but have you seen a new one?
Why did I do that?
Have you seen a new one?
Yes.
Okay, so you're comparing the one you had in your hand to a new one, and you couldn't tell the difference after 100,000 miles. Okay.
Correct. I mean, obviously, it's a little bit of, but on the dioids, a little bit, but not much. And okay. I was really impressed. That's
okay.
Yeah.
Well, you have
and
to be.
All my Toyotas, I get all over 200. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mark.
Oh, okay. All right. I understand. There's a ring of carbon around the very last portion of that spark plug. So if you leave them in there a long period of time, when you start to bring the spark plug out, this ring of carbon is like steel. And sometimes guys don't understand what's going on, so now we have to drip oil down the threads and soften that up so we can get the spark plug out of it.
Right, yeah, I've heard of that.
And so if you get somebody that doesn't know that and brings the threads out on two of them, then you and the shop are going to have a problem. So you ask me my opinion. My opinion is I think you ought to be changing those between 100 and 120, somewhere around there, or whatever the owner's manual says, because we're going to defer to the owner's manual. But I think that when you get up north of the 125 range, I think the risk probably is not bad, but it's certainly enough of a risk that the spark plugs in the car, platinum plugs in the car, make the risk look small. But thank you very much, John. That was a great question. Dewey, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Mark, I'm looking into buying a used RV, and a lot of these RVs seem to run that Triton V10. And I did a little bit of research on it, and it seems like that the back plugs tend to blow out because you can only get like 4.5 threads on those spark plugs. So my question was, have you ever heard of this problem before? And number two, what's your overall opinion of the Triton V10?
Well, yes, I've heard of the problem, and it's just a Triton problem, and it's not that the spark plugs can only get 4 threads and all that other kind of stuff. That's just not it. It is an issue that they blow the plugs out, And it is an issue that it's hard to bring them out. And we just talked about that on that call before, where we get this ring of carbon around the end of them. The spark plug actually stuck through the cylinder, and it was hard to get the plug out. So we're smarter. Our industry's smarter. It's really an issue of how many miles does a motorhome motor have on it, and have they already had it fixed? Now, when this problem, we start blowing spark plugs out of the Tritons, there was no fix. Everybody did something different. Let's fast forward 4 years later. We're all in the same track. We all have the same piece of equipment. We all do it the same way. And yes, we can put threads in there, and yes, it'll be permanent. There's a change in spark plugs most of the time, not always. There's a change in, and there's a difference in the threads in the coil. So this isn't that big of a deal. It's dependent on the accessibility to the spark plug. It is a big deal labor-wise. So it depends on what do we got to move to get to that area. So on a motorhome, you already know that the motor's in there pretty tight. So if we can pull the doghouse and get the two back spark plugs and put new threads in that thing, then we're fine. Keep in mind, when we cut new threads, we got a whole bunch of metal, and we don't want that to go into the cylinder. So we're cutting and we're sucking the metal out the die side, where we're tapping and making a new hole for it, and then we're going to put new threads in, and then we're going to put the spark plug in. So it is something you need to be concerned with, but what years are you talking about? Because if it's a motorhome that from the last 2 or 3 years, that dust has settled before that.
Well, it's probably be vehicles from the late 90s to the early 2000s is okay. What I'm kind of thinking right now.
That's the big sweet spot right there. And you know, ask them, have you had any spark plugs blow out of this Triton motor? And if you know somebody at Ford, you can have them check. And sometimes people don't even know that they had them all replaced already. So they can check the service records on that VIN number and ask that.
So do you guys put in heel coils? Is that what the fix is for that? Or is there something different that they use to repair those?
No, right now I'm pretty sure that we're all using helicoils. And so we're going to make new threads where the old ones are gone, and then we're going to stick the helicoil in there, and then the height and the overall height of the helicoil is important, and you have to seat it right and all that other kind of stuff. So, yes, the answer is that we can put new threads without pulling the heads off.
Okay, so, and overall, you feel pretty comfortable with that engine so far as the reliability?
I am. I think it was a mistake to get rid of the 460 and the Triton V10, but I like the 460 better. And if you can find a 460 motor in a motorhome, I would think that would be your better than the that Triton V10, because one of them's an 8-cylinder, one of them's a 10-cylinder, and I just think it's a better motor, the old 460, port fuel-injected 450. I got to run, but Dewey and Eric, you stay right there. We'll be back with you guys in about 3 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for holding as long as you have. And if you would like to get on, we've got three lines of the 50 available right now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to give us a call. And let me just tell you, well, you know what? I'm going to take Glenn because he waited. And so, Glenn, let's go to you, and what can I do for you?
Thank you, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
I called a couple weeks ago regarding oil in a generator, and you said put anything in there you got, basically.
Okay.
Not synthetic is more specific, right?
Yeah.
I'm about to put in... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
I'm about to put into service a brand-new Honda 2,000-watt generator. Same theory applies. Don't run synthetic, either for break-in or for the duration of its life.
What are they calling for? What kind of weight are they calling for?
I believe it's a 1030.
Okay. In the back of my mind, when I hear this question, and I'm not trying to second guess you, it's because they hear that, you know, once you start with synthetic, you have to stick with synthetic or vice versa. You can't bounce back and forth. That's not true. I don't run.
I've been talked out of that too, right?
Okay. I think you're best served just to do it once a year and buy the cheapest 1030 you can find, maybe with a name brand, Pennzoil, Chevron, whatever. I just think that's what I would do. I have a 5K Yamaha generator that my kids use a lot when they're out camping and stuff like that. I use it here. because it'll run a welder for me. So if I want to go weld on some fence, I just put it in the tractor bucket and drive out there and do my thing. So in your case, do you have any idea how much use this is going to get on an annual basis?
Less than 100 hours, probably. Okay. Maybe less than 50 hours.
And what's the oil change interval based on the owner's manual? Is it 50 or 100 hours?
Oh, you got me there. Okay. I honestly don't know.
Well, and just compare that to your guess. So maybe if you have to do it once a year, or if you can do it once a year, perfect. If you have to do it twice a year, may I suggest you do it at the beginning of the summer and the beginning of the winter, because that's going to be May, and then that's going to be December. So something around there, then that way you go into both of our tough seasons with fresh oil. That's what I would do if I were you. But I wouldn't put synthetic in it, because I don't think there's any value to that, especially because you're going to, you know, put 50 to 100 hours on it. I don't even put that much in my generators on an annual basis. So I think you'll be fine.
Well, what's amazing to me is all the people on the you-know-where all talk about, oh, synthetic is going to make that thing love you and last forever.
Yeah, that's
people on the internet I'm referring to.
No, that's exactly what it is. That's the marketing strategy of so many auto parts, is your car's going to love you. And I suggest that your car has a brain, but it doesn't have any emotion. The car's not going to get mad at you because your wife vomited in the passenger side seat. The car is mad at you, so it's going to blow the right rear tire out. Come on. So anyway, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate you opening that door for me. Let's go to Dennis real quick. Dennis, not real quick, but Dennis, you have the floor.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, listen, I got an 02 Frontier with four-cylinder, and it's got 195,000 miles. I bought it brand new, and I've taken relatively good care of it, and it's really been a really dependable truck. And my question is that even the question I'm asking you, I don't have a problem with. I'm just kind of looking ahead. I've done everything, but I think I've really neglected on anything as transmission-wise. Okay. The fluid is still clear and it looks good, but what should I do?
Well, I think it's probably got a filter in the pan and a removable pan, and I would think that would be something that I would. Now, you've not done any transmission, anything to the transmission in 200,000 miles, right?
Right, okay. And it gives me no problem either.
All right, good enough. Well, see, here's what I usually say. I say, you know, after 30, 40,000 miles, let's take the pan off and replace the filter and add 3 quarts, okay? Let's pretend your system holds 10 quarts. So I'm going to pull the pan, take the filter off, put 3 quarts back in, and send you on your way. The reason I want to do that is because the transmission is going to shed all of its metal in the first 30,000 miles. And I just want to get it out of there, that's all. Now, then I say, I want to see you at 100 again, and I want to flush the fluid. I'm not going after the filter again. I'm just going to flush the fluid. That's going to be twice as much as pull the oil pan and add 3 quarts and a filter. But I'm going to flush all the fluid out, but I'm going to use new fluid to flush the old stuff out.
1 minute.
Which really I use more than 10 quarts. I'm going to use 14 quarts to flush your system. So in your particular case, you have no choice. You have to go in and do the pan and the filter. And then if I were you, I'd probably wait 50,000 miles if it goes that far, and then do a flush. But right now, there's nothing to the idea that if you put new fluid in an old transmission, it's going to fail. If that happens, it's coincidence. It has nothing more to do than that. The fluids from the last 10 years are superior to anything that we ever drank or saw or purchased back in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and even up to the first decade of the 2000s. So, all righty.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you, Dennis. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. And since 1970, they've been around providing expert auto and truck repair, light maintenance services, brakes, windshield wipers, everything to customers in Mesa. Now, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley, has been around a long time, but he's the only Mesa shop on my list because there's a standard that we want shops to exceed. And some did not, and some haven't applied, but they've applied, and they applied the standards, and they met all the standards. So if you're in Mesa and you don't have a good shop, may I suggest that you stop by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. They have AOC certified technicians, and they're certainly well capable of keeping your car in really good shape and diagnosing problems that you may have. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to go till noon on this car repair shop and stuff like that. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. He's an independent shop. He's family-owned, and he's a really good guy. He has two people that work for him. One is his son, and he is a wonderful technician. He is as strong as anybody that I know. And then you have Jeff, and Jeff is the service manager, and he's also in charge of all the floor, where Eric is the master tech and the highest level on the shop floor. So and then Kurt's a master. So when we're master technicians and we own our own shop, it's a little bit hard to BS us. You know what I mean? And that's the benefit of Kurt's shop, because he's been a master, and he is a master. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell, Kurt's has been open since 1987, and he's on the northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. A good guy that does all kinds of gas and diesel work, and he's got certified, trained professionals to take care of your car. Paul, good morning to you. What is it you got on your mind?
Good morning. I've got a 03 Ford F-350 Super Duty dually. The issue I'm having, and it's been going on for a while, you apply the brakes and the pedal is firm at the very beginning, but then it drops down to probably 3 inches off the floor, and then you have brakes, almost like the master cylinder is bad. The master cylinder has been replaced with a brand new one.
Well, I need some questions answered first. Is it a diesel or is it gas?
It's gas.
Okay. And it when you replaced the master cylinder, did it do it before and after?
Correct, yes, it did.
Okay, so is the power brake booster, does the pedal ever feel hard, or does it feel soft, or what's changed in the tension of the pedal?
The pedal feels normal when you first apply it, but then it, like if you're sitting in a light, the pedal will slowly creep down until it gets to like the second stage of the master cylinder.
Okay, and so if you follow the pedal to the floor, does the red brake light pop on the dashboard?
Brake light never comes on. Never has came on.
Okay.
This has been going on for 8 or 9 months.
Okay. Has anybody adjusted up any of the brakes?
I've replaced the pads on the front and the rear.
Okay, so it's four-wheel disc?
Four-wheel disc, correct.
Okay. You know, you've covered all the bases you've covered all the bases correctly, but yet it has to be somewhere along the line. Does it have ABS?
It has rear wheel ABS.
Okay.
And that's what I'm suspicious of that. But what baffles me about it is it never loses any fluid. There's no fluid leaks.
Well, you're not going to lose
fluid.
Where's
fluid going when it's bypassing the master cylinder?
No, that doesn't.
It sort of acts like it's going past the piston on the master cylinder, like when the master cylinder goes bad.
Okay, we don't fix cars that way. You know, it's if you're thinking it's got rear ABS and that's the only thing you haven't done, wait till you get that bill. Wait till you get that guess. So it's not true that the master cylinder is going to leak a brake fluid if it's bypassing, because sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. It really depends on where it's bypassing. Is it bypassing on the cups closest to the back or on the cups closest to the front of the cylinder? Is it bypassing on the front cylinder or on the back cylinder? Those are the things. I'd take the thing out on a slick piece of concrete on a Sunday morning where nobody's going to be yelling at you, and I'd go along 5-10 miles an hour and hammer the brakes and see if the back end chatters. That'll tell you whether ABS is working okay. But it could be a whole lot of things. Does, when you replace the pads on the back, does it have, how's the parking brake? Is the parking brake a cable activated off of the caliper, or does your rotors have shoes behind
it? It's got a drum built in.
It has what? Say that again.
There's a drum built into the rotor.
Okay, that's called a hat.
Cable operated. Yeah.
Okay, that's called the hat. So I didn't want to use that word because most people wouldn't recognize it. But, yeah, so you have a brake shoes for – so it's not going to be anything to do with the parking brake. So I don't know. Have you looked at the pads wear pattern since you put the pads in, and are they worn evenly inner to outer? Okay, that would be something I would look at. if you have an inner pad that's excessively worn, you have a bad caliper. And if you have an outer pad that's excessively worn, then you need a hardware kit. So we need it to slide easy on the pins. So it's just going to take you some diagnosis. But if you replace the master cylinder and you installed it right and bled it right, then you should have fixed it, because that's the most common problem. But until you find it, then you can't answer the question is, did Paul mess this up himself? Did he put the master cylinder on dry? Did he roll one of the cups on the inside, the lip of the cup? Or did he use contaminated fluid? Those are the things I'm thinking about. But I think you just need to have somebody diagnose it. Is the vacuum on the booster, is it acceptable at 16 to 18 inches of vacuum all the time? And is the check valve? Okay, and the check valve needs to be checked. Sometimes we just take it out. There's a lot of different things that you'd use. Now, after it sits for a while, go out there and unplug the vacuum line to the booster, and you should hear a psss, and that means it's holding vacuum. So those are the tests that we would normally run, but the diagnostic on this is probably $50.
Should he have gotten a bad master cylinder?
Okay.
Say that again?
Could he have gotten a bad master cylinder?
Oh, yeah, he could have. I mean, but it's more likely that he got one that – now, this is – I'm just guessing here, okay? He got one that somebody had already tried and returned. He got one that we had some dirt on the lid that fell back down into the master cylinder because we got a master, but maybe it didn't have a lid, or it did have a lid, or somebody stole the lid. There's all this kind of stuff that we get from parts from our vendors.
Right.
So sometimes we get a part, and if it's been installed, it goes right back. I want a sealed box.
Yeah.
So I don't want to chase my tail. But anyway, I'm quite sure this is a fixable issue. What part of town do you live in?
North Phoenix.
Okay, along the I-17 corridor, or along the 101 on either side, or
yeah, around Bell Road, 51st Avenue.
Okay, well, Action Auto's at Deer Valley and I-17, and Kurtz is at I-17 and Bell. Both of those guys could help you out. I got Tom at Thunderbird Auto at 88th and Thunderbird. So I got East and West covered, and those guys, I know all of them could diagnose it, and if you want to fix it yourself, you can. So, but anyway, thank you very much, Paul. That was a good discussion. Thank you. Sam, you're up next. How can I help you, Sam?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Mark.
You bet.
Three quick question areas. First is a 97 Chevy Venture minivan, 100,000 miles about on the transmission, had it rebuilt, and they put synthetic fluid, they said, in it. It's been running fine, and out of town, the TCC fuse blew on us. I guess it's a torque converter.
Torque converter clutch.
10 amp? Yeah. And as soon as we replaced it, it burnt again. And so I took it into the transmission shop out of town, and they said, oh, the solenoid's shorting. We'll have to replace it. So they said, well, you should really replace all the solenoids. I think it was four, maybe three. And I said, okay. And it fixed the problem. No more shorting of the fuse or whatever the line was. And it downshifts hard, especially when it's cold, from around 22 miles per hour to 18. I hear this kick downshifting. So should I put a bottle of, like, stay lube in it?
No. First of all, you shouldn't have done all the solenoids. You know, you got a solenoid that it handles one and two, and a solenoid that handles two and three, and then you got a solenoid that may handle overdrive and lockup. So, you know, you probably have six speeds in your car. No, the problem is, did they create this problem? Is this a problem? They fixed the blown fuse on the TCC side, but did they give you this new harsh downshift?
Yeah, I wasn't doing that before.
Okay. All right. Well, you need to call this shop and ask them if they're a member of the Automatic Transmission Rebuilders Association, ATRA. And they have, if they are, they're more than likely have a shop here in town that can help diagnose that. Be nice, be polite, be firm.
Sure.
And the most important part is I have good news and bad news. Good news is you fixed my TCC problem. Bingo, bingo, bingo. It's not happened before. Thank you. But you gave me something I didn't have before, and that's a harsh downshift. And so do you have a shop here in town that I can go to, and can you two guys work this out? Obviously, that's the kind of conversation. Now, I get that call a lot from shops all over the United States. And that's not because they know me. It's usually because their kids are at ASU and I'm close to ASU. So,
right.
You know, so that's the kind of thing it is. But when it's fixed, everyone will know whose fault it is when it's fixed. So
yeah.
That's the – what part of town do you live in?
Tucson.
Okay. I can't help you down there. God, I've tried my best to find good shops down there, and yeah. It's the ones I've looked at just can't meet the standards that I have, and there's a lot of movement there, and that 5 year I need to be in business 5 years, that's the hard part. But I still think there's some good shops down there. What's the name of Jerry Simon's store?
Simon's 4x4.
Simon's
4x4. I'm not even sure that he's in business anymore.
He may have sold to his staff, but I know him. He's a cowboy. We both race paint horses, and so we have a lot in common. And he was a good guy. You might try Simon's 4x4 and see if they can recommend. You say to him, who does your transmission work? And that's the question. Okay? All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sam. And
Andy interjected that the flush is cheaper than the service on the transmission because there's more labor on the service. So she corrected you.
Who's Andy?
Yeah, your daughter.
Okay.
Your CEO.
All right. Okay, so it's, tell me that again. I messed up.
Yes, she said that there's more labor on service than there is on the flush.
All right, we're talking about transmissions. And when you service it, you drop the pan, you replace three quarts and replace the filter and put everything back up.
Right.
And I said that's cheaper than the flush that has 10 quarts and takes about the same amount of time.
Right.
We may be on a different path here, but I'm going to defer to her because 10 quarts of synthetic fluid is huge. And it overcomes that.
Okay.
Number two, the time frame is about the same. Mm-hmm. But on one over here, we got a gasket and a filter and three quarts of oil. And over here, we don't have a gasket or a filter, but we have about the same time, but we got 10 quarts of oil. So
I don't know.
You know
she
what?
Sees a lot more billing than you do. She does service writing more than you do.
I'm going to change it. The costs are about the same. The costs are and talk to your technician or talk to your shop. But if you're having your transmission serviced, the question is are you pulling the pan, changing three quarts of oil, and replacing the filter and cleaning up the pan where all the debris is, or are you just going to flush the fluid? And I suggest that you do the filter at around 50, and I suggest you do the flush at 100. That's what I suggest.
Okay.
But tell her, when she wants to disagree, she needs to call me and not go through you.
Well, she might have put it on your phone, too, but it came through on my phone.
No, it didn't. So if it's the boss talking to the boss.
She probably knew you couldn't read and talk at the same time, so she sent it to me.
Oh, great, great. And Gil, we got anybody in the wings?
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
2 minutes.
All right, we got the lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We got another hour on the show. So in about, 3 or 4 minutes, I'm going to say goodbye for this hour, but I'll come back on at about 3 minutes after the top of the hour. So at 11:03, plus or minus, we're going to come back on. So if you've got a car question or car problem, or if you want to discuss an old wives' tale and stuff like that, then we can do that. Mm-hmm. I want you during the break to call her up and get specifics.
Specifics.
Yeah, just what is the difference between the two of them, generally speaking?
Well, she said the labor. And are you talking money-wise, if
she says it's the labor, then there's more to it than that. If you're going to do the filter in three quarts and the labor there, and then over here you're going to disconnect the lines, the cooler lines, hook it up to the machine, fill the machine with new fluid, then stand there and monitor the machine.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to me the labor's pretty close to the same with respect to time. Over here, it's going to take probably 45 minutes to an hour to change the transmission fluid and the pan, but over here it's going to be 45 minutes plus to flush it,
because
you can't walk away from that machine, because it's going to, if the hose comes off, it's going to dump 10 quarts of fluid all over the floor.
Yeah.
And that's going to really make me mad. because that's a heck of a mess. But anyway, I tell her I'm not arguing with her, but if she doesn't agree to my version, then she might have Monday off.
I'm sure she'll do that then. I'm sure.
Andy is our daughter, and she actually is actually running the company, and the hardest part for Andy is dealing with her older brother and having to supervise that. And on Andy's business card, it says full-time babysitter of the men at Salem Boys. And that's what it says.
You are included in that.
And I am too.
You're the biggest problem.
We'll be back in a few minutes. 602-508-0960.
Well,
welcome back, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us. And if you have a car question, we have only one line that's taken, so we have three lines or four lines that are open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We're going to go to Jim real quick because he's first and he's been waiting. Jim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2000 Dodge diesel and a 2012 Honda Accord. I'm going to be out of the country for about 6 months. I'm wondering how I can best store these vehicles. They won't be driven.
Oh, piece of cake. Piece of cake. You're going to take it down. You're going to drive them till they're warm and go in and have an oil change done. And you're going to instruct them to air up all the tires to the maximum inflation written on the side of the tire. And then you're going to stop at the gas station on your way home and fill it up with fuel. And you're going to pull it into the garage. And you've got fresh oil, fresh fluid or fuel. And you've got the tires at maximum inflation. You don't have to disconnect the batteries. You can or not. But if you disconnect the battery, you're going to have to reset all your radio stations and your seat recalls and all that stuff. So if I were you, I'd skip that. But
neither
just
one of these cars have that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Great.
Several
years ago, I called you about why pickups have the shocks pointing one forward and one rear. Do you and you were going to meet with a GM group, and I never did get back to you to find out what they concluded.
You know, I frankly remember that conversation really well, but I don't remember what the answer was, but I'll tell you what I think it is now. That differential is secured forward and backward by the trailing arms. So there's no way that the right front's going to move forward or backward unless the bushings are out of it or the other one is. I think it has to do with just where could we put those on there. I don't know if you're better suited by you know, one vertically facing the back and one vertically facing the front or whatever, but I think it's a matter of where's the dual exhaust, where's the fuel tank, where's the cover for the fuel tank, and all that other jazz that goes on. As the car makers, each one of the engineers fights for every square centimeter they get. So when they came out with computers and all of a sudden we need this big iPad underneath the dash, all hell broke loose because everybody goes, well, who's going to give that up? And the windshield wiper motor guy says, well, maybe I can make a smaller one of that. So, but anyway, I do remember that conversation, and I do remember thinking about that, but I must confess I don't remember if I ever did anything about that. But that's we just had a car where we had that same issue. And it was brought to our attention that that was a space thing. We made this change based on we need space. And I said, okay. So, and I don't think there's any difference in the whether they're both to the back or the front, because if you look at the older model trucks, they both came from the, you know, they both pointed backwards. They went from the bottom of the rear axle backwards. And they didn't have any different tire wear than the newer model trucks do, and they don't have any better or worse load capabilities either. So, anyway, that's it. Okay, are you set?
Well, you know, I always concede to your wisdom. I'm one of those guys that need professional help because I always agree with what you say. So.
Oh well.
It's like the disclaimer.
Hold on a minute. We have dissension here. What?
I said, oh yeah, you do need help. Oh my gosh.
I know your wife is there and she's saying, yeah, this guy's sick.
Well, you have to understand one thing. Number one, I tick this button right here and I go, and now she can't talk anymore. And I'll tell you that she's been drinking all morning long, so that explains her behavior. Is that good enough?
Well, coffee doesn't count. Come on.
You're probably right. Anyway, thank you, Jim, very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Kirk is your next caller. Kirk.
And did, okay, Kirk. Okay, we're going to take Kirk because he is our next caller. And by the way, the lines are open, 602-508-0960. But, Kurt, you have my full attention.
I got an old Ranger or an old 4Runner, and the tail end is sideways. When you look at it, or sideways, tilted, you look at the rear bumper, and it's one side of it is much lower than the other. It seems to be a typical problem on a lot of older vehicles, or at least the old vehicles. I see that a lot. What's the cause of that?
Well, it's a matter of measuring. It's a matter of lifting up one side and seeing what the droop and the collapsed height is, and on the other side, this isn't really a tough thing. I mean, most guys could look at it. What does it have, leaf springs or coil springs on the back end?
Coil.
Okay. And they usually sit in a rubber saddle. Are the rubber saddles on both sides, or is one of them missing a rubber saddle?
I believe they're both there.
Okay. Well, the shock absorbers don't have anything to do with it. So if you've got leaf springs or if you've got coil springs and you've got a sag, then you need to check both front and back, because as you can imagine, if the right front drops, the left rear comes up. And if the left rear comes up, then it looks like the right rear is lower because of a diagonal movement of the car. So it's just, you have a ride height issue, and really and truly any senior guy with a little bit of gray nose hairs is going to be able to look at that thing and in 15 or 20 minutes come up with something that, you know, they'll know what's wrong with it. So that's not a hard one. I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is the ride height is different, and that's how the body sits on the ground, you know, the distance from the body on the ground. That's a critical thing on the newer model cars, on the old ones that you talk about. It wasn't real critical, or at least we didn't know it was critical back then, but today the newer model cars, ride height is very important. So, now, what part of town do you live in?
Chandler.
Okay. The closest shop to Chandler is me. So if you want, I'm quite sure my guys could answer your question, and I'll make this offer to you. You call and make an appointment. Tell them you want to, you got a sag and you wanted to look at it, and they'll let you go back into the shop with them. And as long as you don't yak the technician for an hour and only want to pay for 5 minutes, then I'll be happy. But you can go back into the shop and they'll show you what it is. And if you want to walk back there and watch him diagnose it, you can do that too. We don't care.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. 602-508-0960.
Tom is your next caller. Tom.
And, Tom is my next caller, but hold on just a minute. You can cue him up, but I've got to do ride height issue, and I forgot to write that down, and if I don't do it right now, I'll forget it. Okay, Tom, you got my full attention. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Hey, my neighbor keeps having trouble with his van, and I don't know. I gave him your information this morning, but I don't think he called you. But he keeps having trouble. He'll, especially if it's gotten hot again, it'll be driving along, and then it just will die on him and won't restart for like maybe 20 minutes to half an hour. Sounds like a vapor lock. Is there any way to diagnose whether that's really a vapor lock or not? And what would it take to fix something like that?
Well, we've jumped the gun here just a little bit, because it's not. Is that you or me?
Might be me.
Okay. All right. Is it a fuel injected vehicle or is it a carbureted vehicle?
Yeah, it's a 2000 Chevy van. It has a Vortex engine, so it's fuel injected. Yeah.
Okay. Well, fuel under pressure doesn't vapor lock. So when we have a pump in the tank and we're shoving gasoline forward at 45 miles an hour, that eliminated vapor lock for the rest of our lives. So you can run the gas line around the tailpipe if that's what you want, but fuel under pressure doesn't vaporize. So the fuel, this idea of vapor locking on a fuel injected car is just not there. The question is you said something about hot. Does the car have to be hot? Are we looking at the temperature gauge, or are you saying that when the motor's warmed up?
Just normal running.
Okay.
It seems to do it.
Okay.
It did it again for him the other day, and then it won't do it for a good bit, and then every once in a while it'll do it, and I just didn't know what there was to be there.
Okay. Well, here's what I would say if I was talking to him. I would say to him, we have to determine if it's fuel or spark, because it could be either one. So we have to somehow or another teach him how to tell us what it is. So I would give him an old spark plug, and I'd put a bunch of dielectric grease on one of the boots, and I would teach him how to pull the boot and stick the spark plug in and set it over here and reach through the driver's window and look underneath the hood and watch it and crank it over. Oh, it's got spark. That's snap, 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 snap. And you can hear it and you can see it, and you go, okay, I got spark. Then I would say, okay, go over here to the air filter box and open up the air filter box, pull the air filter out, and spray 10 seconds of carb spray in that mouth there. And then put the air filter back on, put the lid, and if the car starts, runs, and dies, then you have identified for me that it's a fuel starvation problem. So obviously we're going to replace the fuel filter first. You can do that now anyway. But we want to take the fuel filter out, and we want to put it to our lips, and we want to blow hard through it. We want to have a new fuel filter in our other hand, and we're going to blow hard through it. The new fuel filter is going to blow through like a straw. And the old filter, if it's plugged up, it's going to be like Louis Armstrong. Your cheeks are going to buff out, and you can't blow through the filter. So
2 minutes.
And then if it happens more regularly, then he can rent a fuel pressure gauge, and we can attach that to the outside of his windshield, and he can monitor the fuel pressure. And then if he says, hey, when it dies, it gets below 35 pounds, and when I cycle the key to start it, it doesn't get up above 35 pounds, and if I wait 20 minutes and I hit the key, then it pops right up to 55 pounds and the car starts. Well, he's diagnosed the pump and the check valve being bad. So those are the kinds of things that we have to do, but VaporLock's not going to be one of them if it's got the Vortec motor in it. All righty. Thank you, Tom, very much for being kind enough to call on your neighbor's vehicle. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix since 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. They do everything from overhauls to small repairs, small oil leaks, harsh shifting, up, down, or it goes into neutral first thing in the morning. They're capable of all of that kind of stuff. Plus, they'll drive with you. If you've learned how to make it happen, then they'll certainly hop in your car to you to demonstrate it, but you can't take them to Lake Pleasant and hope that it's going to happen on the trip up or down. And you laugh, but Phil told me somebody took him to
Canyon Lake. Yeah.
To Canyon Lake. He's at 40th Street in Washington. The guy picked him up and said, well, it happens when the boat's on the back. And Phil says, the next thing I know, we're heading east on Apache Boulevard going to Canyon Lake. And then they argued about whether the symptoms match the repair. And
yeah.
He takes Phil along to tell him.
Yeah.
And it turns out Phil says, this isn't an engine problem or a transmission problem. This is an engine problem.
Right.
So they argued, and then Phil said, if you don't take me back, I'm going to call the police and say you kidnapped me. And the guy finally took him back. Anyway, that's Phil. He's a good guy, and he knows everything about transmissions. So if you're in Phoenix and anywhere near Central Phoenix, then Automatic Transmission Exchange is located at 40th Street in Washington. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to go till noon. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to noon talking about car repair problems. Well, let me tell you about one of the best diagnosticians I know in the Valley, and that's Bob at Larry Harker's Auto Repair. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Ellen runs the front. Bob runs the back. And between the two of them, they do a really great job working on cars. But Bob, he doesn't like to admit it, but he really likes to hear this sentence. I've had my car to everybody in town, and nobody can fix dot, 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 dot. That's like waving the red flag in front of a bull, because he'll fix it. There's been times I've sent people to him, and he's fixed it when no one else could. So as far as the west side of town is concerned, you're talking 38th Avenue and Indian School. That's Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They have the equipment, they have the knowledge, they have the tenacity, and they do both foreign and domestic vehicles. Larry Harker's Auto. Let's go to the phones. Jerry. Jerry, thank you very much for calling. How can I help you?
Hello, Mark. I'm working on a clock spring on a 2002 Dodge Intrepid. I've got it all apart, and I'm putting it all back together again. When you install it again, it says the drive pin is rotated 180 degrees from center. So you can't get the steering wheel back on with the new clock spring installed because the drive pin is 180 degrees off from where it should be on your steering wheel. And the wire connections have to be, again, 180 degrees from where they are. So my brain isn't wrapped around how do I rotate that whole thing.
Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. And the steering wheel hasn't changed since you took the steering wheel off to replace the clock spring.
So That's correct. There's an indent on the steering wheel and on the drive shaft for the steering wheel. So the steering wheel can only go back together one way.
I understand.
Okay.
So instead of having a complete spline all the way around, it's got a flat spot on the spine and on the steering wheel, so you have to put the steering wheel back in the same position.
Exactly.
I don't know. I'm fixing this through your eyes, but the first thing I would do is I would call. You probably bought the clock spring from the dealer, yes?
No, I bought it online.
Okay. I guess you bought it in the box, so I would get on the website for the manufacturer, and I would go into their application area and make absolutely sure that you got the right clock spring. You're right, the steering wheel can't go anyplace but one. And you're right, the wiring harness has to be here, and then we have this sensor that tells us where the steering angle is. And you, what year was this car, the vehicle?
It's a 2002.
Okay.
When I disassembled it, the drive pin was in the correct position for the steering wheel.
The old one was?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But what you're saying is the clock spring is horizontal on the bottom, and the clock spring, the housing needs to be horizontal on the top. And
correct.
So your pin's 180 degrees off, and the only thing I can tell you is I think I'm 80% sure you got the wrong part. So there's no fix for that. There's no shortcut for that. I'm just thinking you got the wrong part. So just go back into the application, but don't go where you came from. Go someplace else, maybe to the manufacturer's website, and see if you can do that again. If not, call the 800 number tomorrow morning or Monday morning and ask them to identify, and just have your VIN with you, because the VIN will tell, they're going to want the VIN to see what it is. Now, that's assuming that, of course, your car hasn't ever been wrecked and somebody hasn't put a different steering column in there. And if that's the case, that's still not something that's insurmountable. Good parts people can figure that out in a heartbeat. So that's what I would do. But I don't have an answer for you on how you can turn that 180 degrees, because you can't. Like you said, the harness is going to prevent that.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you, Jerry.
Hopefully he has another car to drive this weekend.
Well, no, he could take the clock spring out.
Oh, okay.
And drive it with, no, it's going to have an airbag light on it.
Oh, gotcha.
But he can still drive it.
Okay.
And, oh, God, why?
That would be bad.
He didn't say anything about a wife. He didn't say anything about her car.
I was just thinking, yeah, well, maybe it is.
Okay, all right.
She needs it
to
go to Nordstrom.
Yeah, or Goodwill, which is where you hang out. Anyway, Harold, you're up next. Harold, how can I help you?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I recently acquired a 65 Mustang with a 289 C4 transmission in it. It's a Blue Dot transmission. I was wondering, what type of transmission fluid would you recommend in that C4? That old C4.
You know, that's best ask of the guy who built it, but you probably don't have that information available, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
I don't know if any of these guys are open on the weekend. Or
I would call Automatic Transmission Exchange and ask for Phil, and he gets out of there kind of early in the morning, so you get early and call him and ask him that question. He's better suited than I. Let's first talk about this. First, you only have two choices. You have Type F or a synthetic.
Yeah.
That's it. That's
right.
The only two choices you got. The question is there a downside to stepping up and retrofitting that transmission with a synthetic fluid? And I think the answer is no. Because there's no way we're going to put 65 clutches in a car in 2018. So the clutches have been redesigned. They're different than they were in 65. There's no question. So I don't think you can go wrong either way. But if I had my druthers, and if you're going to hot rod that, or if you've got a son that's going to hot rod that, or if your wife hot rods that, I'd put some synthetic in. That's what I'd put.
Okay.
And a Dextron, all right. a Dextron Mercon would be what you'd be looking for.
Okay.
All righty?
Very good. Thank you very much.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602.
Jim is your next caller. Jim.
508-0960. Jim, you're up. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have two quick questions about the same vehicle. I have a 2006 Ford Ranger pickup with the 4-liter V6 engine.
Okay.
And the first question is, I have an intermittent problem with the cruise control. Sometimes it'll work okay. Sometimes it'll work, and then after 3 or 4 or 5 miles, it'll just shut off.
Okay.
And kind of an important important symptom of that is when it disengages, there's a clunking sound under the dash down somewhere around the steering column.
Okay. What I want you to do is I want you to drive your vehicle and hook your left foot underneath behind the brake pedal and pull it towards you and drive it and see if that fixes it. And then you let go of the pedal gently, and then a mile later it cancels the cruise control, because the canceling of the cruise control is done by the brake light switch. And so I just want to make sure the brake light switch is appropriately adjusted. So if you hook your foot behind it and pull it upwards and the cruise control stays locked for a long period of time, then I've just saved you $35 worth of diagnostic fee, unless, of course, it was me, and it would be like $235.
Oh, gosh.
So basically, then the switch might be out of position or something like that.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's the most common place you have, and that's the first place you should look. And I just described to you how to do it.
Okay. Well, great. My second question, again, about the same vehicle, and I know you get a lot of calls about oil changes and things like that, but I've never really heard on oil change interval on a vehicle I don't drive this truck very often. I put maybe 2,500 or 3,000 miles a year on it.
Okay.
1 minute.
So with that light usage, should I still change oil about once a year?
Yeah. I would change it in April or May every year and just use a conventional oil. There's no sense in spending any big bucks for the fancy oils. Just use a conventional oil, change it April or May, drive your a year, and then do it April, May again. That's certainly acceptable. That falls within all the parameters. And I have some extra special training on oil, so I can assure you that Valvoline and Chevron are probably going to agree with what I say. So, anyway, thank you very much for the call. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Everybody waits till the last half hour of the show, but that's okay. I expect that. That's why my wife's sitting here. She's going to help me with your hard questions.
Sure.
Anyway, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark. She's Renee. We're the Salems, and every Saturday, 10 to noon, we're here talking about car repair issues. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And let me tell you real quick about S&S Tire Auto Service. For those of you on the west side, for those of you that want to do pretty much all your shopping on the west side, I want to tell you that S&S has three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have the huge and a very comprehensive line of tires in many different brands and the same size of many of those brands. So you can stop by and say, take a look at my tire size and give me three prices, good, better, best. And they can pull that off. And you can write your check before you say okay on the tires, and that's how much it'll be. But they've got tires from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between, but they can balance your tires. They do alignments and suspension work, and it's always best to have the person that's going to look at the tires and read the wear patterns. They're the ones that should do the work to fix it. So you must have the person who's going to look at it and the person that's going to fix it. They should be the same. It's in your best interest for them to be the same. So S&S, again, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, three good places to go. Real quick, let me tell you about pricing something. I don't do this very often, so I'm going to make it as quick as I can. I quote pricing, and how I quote pricing is I kind of know what I charge. And so pretend with me that we charge $100. Well, what I do is I open that up to 75 to 125. And the reason I open it up is to cover all the guys in the industry. You can't go by my pricing on the telephone, but at least I'm going to be in the range. So no matter what the pricing is, I pretty much know I'm in the middle or at the 50 or 60% mark. So I just take whatever I charge and then we bracket it. Now, there was an argument between my daughter and I earlier today. I had said that a flush of your transmission service is a little bit more expensive than just pulling the filter and changing the fluid. So she called me on it. But, Andy, I want to tell you something. The price sheet I have in front of me that you built for me, the most current one you have is June 22nd of 2016. And when I look up transmission service, the range is 110 to 210. And obviously that depends on the filter. But if you flush it, then it's between 147 and 160. So the 110 to 210, and the average is 150, and the other one is 140, 150 to 160. It's about the same. So I made a mistake when I say the transmission service and the transmission flush, and the service we do the pan, 3 quarts of oil, and the filter, and the flush is we don't do anything but change the filter, or the fluid, I should say, those are about the same price. But again, they're going to be in the vicinity of somewhere between $150 and $200, depending on the shop that you go to. All right, let's go to the Keith. Keith, good morning. Thank you for holding. What can I do for you?
Good morning, sir. I have a 2006 Dodge Dakota. It's got a fairly new fan clutch on it, but when I start the truck, it always runs about 1,200 RPMs for only about 60 seconds, drops down to what I think is a little low, down to about 750 RPMs. Now, it has stalled on me several times since it's been new, and nobody's ever been able to really dictate why or tell me why that is. But the real problem is, as soon as I start it, it seems like that fan clutch is always engaged for about the first 4 or 5 miles I'm driving, and then it shuts off.
I don't know that I would bother with that. I don't know why there's harm. We don't know how it was shut off when you start, or you shut it off that night, so we don't know what it saw last. And as long as it comes on and then it goes off, I think that they should install that on every fan clutch, because that's kind of an on-off switch. Hey, Mark, my fan clutch hasn't locked up in the morning for a long time. And so that's kind of how it works. So I don't know that the fan clutch is a real big deal. Is the 750 RPM that's bothering you, is that in a load gear, is that in reverse or drive, or is that in neutral?
That's in drive several times. And again, it can be right away. And it happens only a few times a year, but it can be right away, or it could be I've been driving for 3 hours and I come to a stop at a red light, and as soon as I start to go, it'll kick off. I have to restart it real
okay.
quick.
Well, my Dodge Dually does the same thing. So, and I got 88,000 miles on it. And there's intermittently it comes on for whatever reason, and all I listen for is, I want you to go off. And so it does. So I don't know when I come to a stop. I don't know if I'm especially hot. I don't know if I just came off of a big pull. I don't know how many horses I got in the trailer. I don't know all that. But I'm not sure that that's something that needs to be addressed. It's two reasons. Number one, it's either locked up all the time and it's defective, or it never locks up and you're running 3/4 on your gauge. So that's the light bulb on, light bulb off kind of thing. And as far as the idle is concerned, if you're in 750 warm, I would think you'd be 700 plus or minus 25. So 675, maybe even 650, upwards to 750, that's fine. In drive, warmed up. We don't do any idle adjustments or changes or look at the idle when it's cold. So until it gets to operating temperature, the computer's going to control the idle and bring the idle up. As far as dyeing and stalling is concerned, you know, spark or fuel, it's going to be one of those two. Somebody has to figure that out. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck to you.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jim. Thank you very much. Keith, you're up next.
That was Keith. Yeah, John.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm writing it in the wrong place. All righty. John, you're up next. I'm sorry. How can I help you?
That's okay. Hey, I don't know if you can help me, but just your opinion. I've got two 2009 Hyundai Sonatas. One's my daughter. She graduated from college. She's going out of state to Utah. And she's got 160,000 miles on that car. Mine is 110. And trying to decide what should... She really can't afford a new car until she works for a year there. What should we do to prepare her car for that terrain, that with that kind of mileage, timing belt, anything you could recommend? I'm trying to decide if I should switch cars with her since mine is lower mileage.
Okay. I can answer that, but I'm going to put you on hold for just a minute because I got to take a break. But that's also going to give me a little better time to just think about what's best here. I may tell you right off the bat that the mileages are just too close for me. I don't know if we're going to be able to answer your question, which one's best. But I have some other questions, like how far she's going to drive when she gets to school and stuff like that. And are we predominantly worried about getting her to the school? And after that, her drives are going to be real short? Or, you know, what kind of driving is she going to do after she gets to college? And so we'll talk about that. You stay right there. We've got open lines for anybody else, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. I'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to go back to the phones real quick because I asked John to hang on. And John said he has two...
I'm talking to the radio.
Two Sonatas that are 09s. One of them has 160,000 miles. One of them has 110. Daughter's going to college. Which one do I send her with? How long has your daughter been driving?
She's probably 6 years.
Okay. And does her car look like it's been in a bumper car commission competition?
Well, she's the third child to use that car, so it's been kept outdoors at different colleges in the Midwest. Now it's out here for a couple of years.
All right. So I don't think the mileages don't bother me, and I'll tell you this. Engines that we replace, 100% of the engines, 99% of the engines we replace have been damaged by the nut behind the wheel. So they've overheated them to where the motor looks like a piece of burnt toast, or they've run it low on oil. So both of these should go well over 200, 250,000 miles. And the beginning of the end is blue smoke. We're going to start consuming oil. Then we're going to develop internal pressure, and we're going to start having some oil leaks. And then the end of the day is going to be we have a spark plug that's fouled. You have an engine miss. They pull the plug out, and it's fouled with oil. Then the end is near. So you don't have any of those. So I think it's really just a matter of sending her to school, and it's a flip of a coin. I'm sure you probably serviced them pretty close to the same. I would think that you take it to the shop and say, she's going to college, and now how far is she going to drive to college?
Salt Lake.
Okay.
So
500-600 miles?
She's not going to fly. You said it's a 10-hour drive, so it's probably every bit of that. And then she's not coming home driving. She's going to fly home.
All right. I think I would just take it in and say, do an oil change. And I'd probably put a semi-synthetic in there. That'll get her through 6 months. Okay. And I put a conventional, then you got 30 days or 90 days. And I think you're better off with a semi-synthetic. Gives you a longer interval. I think I'd take her to the shop and just say, look at everything that could cause her to break down between now and a year from now.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at, and the four things really is tires, belts, hoses, fluids. That's really what it's all about. So if she's going to break down, it's going to be a tire, it's going to be a belt or a hose or a fluid issue. So if you can kind of send her away that way. But, you know, really and truly, you and I can talk about it all we want, but your wife's going to make the decision anyway.
So true. Hey, if I end up trading in my old van in one of those two cars, will that affect the trade-in value 6 months from now? So if I trade in the one with higher mileage, is it really going to make a difference or not? I'd rather keep the low mileage one for myself.
Well, first of all, I'm adamant that I don't ever trade anything in. I think because time and time again over all my years of this for helping my customers and my family out is, you know, you can double the trade-in value. You have to know that on the car you're going to buy, they have what they call a pack, and that's a what if. So if you come in and your car's a piece of crap and it's worth $200, they're going to give you $2,000 or $3,000, and you're going to think that, you know, you're in hog heaven. But see, the pack they've got is already $2,000. So they've already upped everything $2,000. So now you're going to get $2,000 for your junk car, but really and truly you're going to get the same $200 you got on the front side. So I would sell it. Get your, you know what? Here's the best advice I can give you. Guys like me, and guys probably like you, we have a three-ring notebook with every maintenance thing we've ever done.
Yeah, and a computer, too.
And on the spreadsheet. And so you put it in Craigslist, and you figure out what the going rate is. And you can go to KBB.com and do a private party sale analysis, and it'll tell you, and it'll ask you for your zip code, and it'll tell you what the cars are going for in that area.
Right. KBB.com, okay.
Yeah, and you're going to look for private party sale, and you're going to pretend like you're either buying or selling this thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the price is the same. So I would do that. Now, there is a sales tax offset. So, you know, if they give you, if the car's worth $2,000, then at 10%, that's $200 sales tax offset. But if you sell it, if they're going to give you $2,000 and you sell for $3,000, then you still made $800.
There you go.
And see,
and then,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and I don't have cash to buy it outright, so I thought maybe the trade-in two vehicles would, give me a better
Yeah, but I think you're going to find out, depending on your credit rating, I think you're going to find out you could buy a car for little or no money down. So don't lease it, but I think you can probably do that. But yes,
we'd never lease.
Okay.
Yeah.
If their only way that they want a down payment, then yeah, you're going to have to trade one of them in. But if I can.
Well, I'm sorry. I meant to say I could get a better deal if I traded into cars but didn't have a lot of other cash to put down.
Okay. I think you're wrong about that. I think you're wrong. I think you're going to get a better deal when you walk in there unencumbered. You got a good credit score.
Yeah.
You got good credits, and you're walking in and you're saying, "I want that car. How much do I write my check for?" Or that's what I want to finance. I think you're far better off than to compound it. Because here's the risk: he gives you $2,000 and he sends it to the auction because he needs payroll money, and he only gets $1,500. So he took a beating on your car. So you're unencumbered when you walk in. All righty. All right. Thank you very much. That was a good conversation. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark. Question on transmission fluid.
Okay.
I just bought a 2016 Mazda, and I like, the multi-vehicle Valvoline.
Okay.
And I don't know. It just says Honda and multiple vehicles, and I'm overwhelmed with the LV and the NV, and can you put some light on that for me?
Yeah, you can call the dealer parts department and just give them your VIN and say, what kind of transmission do I have, when you have that piece of paper in front of you. Most good transmission shops will be able to tell you that, which one you have. The only thing that you don't want to deviate from is if you have a CVT, a constant velocity transmission that only has one gear but a big old clutch on it. You don't want to deviate from the OEM fluid because nobody wants the responsibility. So Valvoline and Havoline and Chevron and all those people, we don't want to make an oil for that piece of crap transmission. So we're not making an oil. You go. But you should know too that the oil that's got in a Motorcraft bottle probably came from one of the four big guys that makes oil. So there's no such thing as proprietary. Yeah. I mean,
it's got the 6-speed in it. It doesn't have the CVT. I know that CVT is a just totally different animal.
Okay. Well, call Phil over at Automatic Transmission Exchange, and if you run into a problem, I want you to send me your VIN number, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Send me your VIN. I know a wholesale guy. He doesn't take calls, but he will mine. And if you give me your VIN and give me the physical description in an email, then I'll call my guy, and he'll be able to tell me unequivocally what you've got. And then you're doing the right thing, though. You're looking at the specifications for the multi-vehicle fluids. And if it's in there, Valvoline indemnifies the shop, and that says, Mark Salem, if you put our product in the transmission, and they say that your product failed, made the transmission failed, we step in front of you. So you're not going to get sued. You could get sued, but we're going to step in front of you, and we're going to defend you. That's called indemnification. I can't spell it, but I can say it.
Okay.
So, all righty.
All right. Thank you.
You betcha. Doug, you're up next. How can I help you, Doug?
Hey, good morning. I have a 07 Chevy Silverado 3/4 ton, and I'll come outside and see my truck, and the rear tail light, the top bulb will be on. And it's intermittent, but I'll come out and find it on one day, next day it's off.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Well,
I replaced the battery. I thought maybe the battery was weak and it was recycling something.
No. Okay. First thing we have to do is identify what the bulb is. Is it a running light? Is it a tail light? Is it a reverse light? Is it a turn signal? Because brake and turn signal are the same filament. So what is that light?
Yeah, I think it's the running light.
Okay, so it doesn't change
it's
intensity.
Not the breaker backed up.
Okay, all right. Well, there's some kind.
You know what? I didn't research that.
That's okay. Just get your wife to get in the truck and hit the brakes. Okay, honey, good. Turn on left turn and take your foot off the brake. Turn on left turn. Turn on right turn, and then take your foot completely off the brake. Turn off the turn signals and turn on the park lights, and you'll figure it out real quick. Silverados have had problems with sockets. And sometimes the socket is bad, and most of the time it makes the light not work. But it depends. If it's a two-filament light, it could easily be some kind of a transfer of electricity. But to be perfectly honest with you, what I would do is I would swap the bulb from one side to the other. And then if the socket...
Both sides will be on.
Oh, both sides
the
are on.
The truck will be sitting and the light... Yeah, both sides are on, the truck's sitting, and I'll come out there and the light's on for some reason.
Okay, all right.
Both sides.
Now, because I don't know which... If it's a park light, let's assume it's a park light. Then you need to walk around the front and see if the park lights are on in the front. Because
yeah, I didn't notice anything in the front, but I'd have to look closer.
Okay, because the park lights are going to do all four corners, and they're going to do the corners both forward-facing and to the outside. So you have those kinds of issues, because you don't just have two park fronts, two front parks. You got four. You got two facing the front, and then you got one behind the headlight that faces the passenger side and the driver's side, and it's the same in the back. But if you have other park lights on, then it has to be a switch problem. And I don't know why you haven't had a dead battery, okay. but it has to be a switch problem. Now, the lights are on, okay? Get in the truck and get somebody to help you and watch and see what happens. Now, I would take the light switch and I would roughhouse the lights. Well, first of all, I'd turn it slowly. It's probably in the off position or in the auto position. So I'm just going to turn it left a little bit and listen, nothing. Right a little bit. Hey, they went off. Oh, okay. So my messing with the headlight switch, I got the lights to go off. So a couple more of those tests, and you go back and forth with the switch, and then the light goes on or off. Bingo, it's a switch. You're done. Getting it out of there is another story, but you're done. Okay?
All righty. Appreciate it.
All right, good luck to you. It's difficult to get the headlight switch out of most cars because you have to reach around behind the dash, and there's a certain button you have to push, and that way you can pull the knob out first. And then you can get the switch out the back, and usually they don't give you much room to work, and that's the reason why I made that comment. All righty. So when we talk about Strictly Diesel, we're talking about a shop that really focuses on diesel. Strictly Diesel is I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They've been around a very long time. They are die-hard diesel people. They service, repair, and they sell parts. So you can go on their website. They've got lots of parts for sale. So if you're interested in a cold air kit and you want to look at all the options, then Strictly Diesel might be someplace that you stop by. So they're really good at diagnosing, because this is what car repair is all about. Talk to the customer, diagnose the concern, bid the concern, fix the concern, and come in under your estimate. And then drive the car and verify the symptoms gone. So it's like a 5 or 6 step process, and they're good at that. So that's Strictly Diesel, and they work on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. And they're, again, it's I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and they're really, really good guys. When it comes to car repair issues, the most important thing to do, and guys have a tough time with this, but not necessarily ladies, is symptoms. Just symptoms. Don't tell them you think it's the master cylinder. Don't tell them you think that it's the headlight switch. Don't tell them that. Give them the symptoms. Now, you also say to them, what's your checkout fee? And most of us will give you a range. And then you hold them to the range. Okay, Mark, I hear you saying between $75 and $100, right? Yes, that's what you hear me saying. Okay, good. Now, you have to trust your shop that it's when he fixes it at $65, he's going to bill you at $65. But the range is there because we don't know the answer. Now, when we're checking a problem down, it's going to be $100 to find it, and I'm using stupid numbers here, $100 to find it and $100 to fix it, or $100 to find it and $200 to fix it. So it's a two-part process. We have to find it first. And then we have to bid the repair. And then if we're really good, we do the repair, and then we verify the symptoms gone so that you don't have to call us back and say, Mark, I got the same symptom. So those are the kinds of things. The best car repair shops list is at marksalem.com. It has the very best car repair shops. And here's my promise. If you have a problem with one of my shops and the Better Business Bureau tells them to give you money or fix your car and they refuse, I will. And just the other day, one of my shops had a Better Business Bureau finding go against him. He delivered a $2,000 check to my shop, and I handed it to the repair shop. Or the other way around. The repair shop gave me a check, and then I handed it to the customer. So the customer was made whole. But if the shop didn't pay the $2,000, I was prepared to pay the $2,000. My limit is $5,000, but I'm prepared to pay that. So Mark Salem, is marksalem.com. Stop by there, and that has a lot of information. I'll see you next Saturday right here.